This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
It's Ladies' Day here on Cravings, boys and girls. Well, apart from a couple of boy voices, but my guests are all female and we're going to have a great deal of fun. We're looking forward to your company. Stay with us. Well, maybe our buzzword today is cravings, but I think it should be something else. I think our buzzword today should actually be ladies, because I have a studio not full of them. I will be talking to a lot of ladies today. But I do have a co-host. He's not a lady, never professed to being a lady. Nathan Miller, hello.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
7 minutes past one.
It is 7 minutes past one.
You're going to join me and co-host today because you've eaten something that I have not eaten that one of our guests has produced.
That's correct. Can I?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful, delicious seafood pie. And by seafood pie, I literally mean a seafood pie.
Mm-hmm.
It's gorgeous. So, quite excited to talk about fish pie today.
I'm going to leave that well alone and it will go through to the keeper. The person who made that fish pie is from Lafayette Fine Foods. She joins me in the studio and she joins Nathan. Sue, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're a member of the station. It makes
I
me
have.
Very happy.
Yes, and so is Lafayette.
And the business member. Excellent.
Yes.
How long has Lafayette been around?
We have been in business 23 years.
23 years?
Yes. Time flies when you're having fun.
Is that a little British accent you've got?
It's a Kiwi accent.
Ooh. Oh, same thing.
Oh, I don't know about
from
that.
Overseas, some might say the Queen's English. So you've been around for a long time.
We have, yes.
And you, back in, let me think, November, opened your second store?
Second store, yes, in Toorak, yes.
Why did you take so long to open number two?
Just...
Teething problems with number one that ran
no,
for 20-odd years?
No, not at all. My partner Michelle and I spend a lot of time overseas at the moment, and we were just thinking, well, should we retire or should we do something else? And the opportunity arose to do something else, and we decided to do that.
You're too young to retire.
Oh, I don't know about that.
God, if you're retiring, did you hear that?
Yes.
She's retiring, so am I.
No.
I'll hang up the cans and give it a rest. So the second store has gone nuts, I understand.
Yes, yes, doing very well. So we're very excited about it.
And is the seafood pie, now I'm going to try and remember, rockling, salmon, prawns, velouté, which is sort of
that's
like
right,
a...
That's right, fish velouté, yes.
Roux-based sauce.
Yes, made with fish stock.
And some pastry, nothing else.
That's it.
Homemade pastry, yes.
Homemade pastry, puff pastry, yes.
And
with butter.
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
Talking about this before, and as making puff pastry from scratch, you end up with massive shoulders and great biceps,
yeah.
But and a big stomach afterwards when you eat it all. But when I put it in the oven the other night, it just watching the puff pastry, each what? Layer just fluff up, it
oh,
was
good.
Just sensational. So
oh,
well done.
Thank you very much.
And here's the chef. Knows
that's,
what he's
that's
talking about.
Great, yeah. Great news. Great to hear.
I want to talk a little bit about Easter, and we'll do that shortly. We're going to have some messages in a minute, and we'll talk a little bit about Easter. Give us the Lafayette story. How did it come about, first of all, and why? And, you know, it's been quite a long evolution. So give us a bit of the story for those playing at home.
Okay, Lafayette came about because I returned to Melbourne from living in San Francisco, and I wanted to start my own business. Certainly didn't want to do a restaurant, but I wanted to do something, and Lafayette was born.
Hmm. Are you a chef by trade?
I am a chef by trade.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Where did you work in San Francisco, can I ask?
Yes, you can. Chez Panier, of course. I think that's goes without saying. And also a restaurant that people probably haven't heard of called called Bridges. And the claim to fame with Bridges is it was in the movie Mrs. Doubtfire. And they were all chefs in the background.
Where, is that where the paprika was given to Pierce Brosnan and he nearly choked?
I think so. And Robin Williams runs through the kitchen. Well, that's they're all chefs there. They're not actors.
Oh,
so I was very excited.
Real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What part of San Francisco is Bridges in?
Danville.
Nice.
Which is
it's a beautiful city, San Francisco.
San Francisco is a great city.
We can turn this into a travel show. You're from New Zealand. Yeah. You lived in San Francisco. Yes. You're now back in Melbourne.
Melbourne, that's it. Yeah.
So how old were you when you left New Zealand?
I was 25.
Okay. And was it because New Zealand wasn't big enough for your talent?
Basically. Mm. Basically, you know, it's a small... It's a great place to live, great place to go back to, but for me it just wasn't offering anything for my field, and I did want to, you know, at that stage, it was back in the late 80s, Petty Shoe was around, Tansy's. Yes. I wanted to work in these restaurants, so I came to Melbourne and worked at Petty Shoe for 2 years.
So is Melbourne home, or do you still call New Zealand home?
No, Melbourne's home. Melbourne's home.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call.
Except for when the All Blacks in the World
I was going to say, there is going to be a discussion here about rugby without question.
Yeah.
Have you adopted an AFL team?
Oh, that's a tricky one. My partner is a very keen Richmond supporter.
We like her.
And I sort of kind of go for Tigers, but I like the Hawks also.
Each way bet.
Oh, yeah, each way bet's a good way to go. We're going to have a couple of messages here on Cravings. It's already 13 minutes past one. We're almost 25% of the way through, and we've barely not got anywhere yet. We'd love to hear from you, 0427JOY949. Should you care to send us a text message, you can tweet to CravingsJOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Is there anything coming?
No.
No, my one fan's not listening. We look forward to hearing you. You've got questions for Sue about food, about making the best fish pie. Or if you have questions really of anything in nature. We'll be shortly speaking to Ella Wolf Tasker as well about the Regional Producers Day in Daylesford. But all that's to come. Let's have some messages.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Gabriel. And thank you, Ella Wolf Tasker. She sent a tweet telling us she's going to talk to us shortly.
Yes, very exciting.
And we're going to play a happy birthday.
She's good.
Yes. I wonder if she's listening. Was her birthday yesterday? Yesterday? Day before.
Yeah.
Last couple of days. Happy birthday, Ella. We have in the studio Sue, who is here from Lafayette Fine Foods in Brighton and Toorak.
That's correct.
Nice part of town you work in.
Yes.
along with the aforementioned seafood pie, what else do you cook? Is it the sensible thing where I can come in and get a take-home meal, go home, just bang it in the oven, jump in the shower, check an email, and there it's ready?
Yep, absolutely. Our food's cooked, gourmet, for want of a word. Take home, easy to cook, heat up yourself, healthy, nutritious.
Are we lazy consumers, or are we busy?
I don't think we're lazy. I think we are busy, and our clientele have families, and the kids are all doing different sports, whatever's after school. You know, it's nice to have some healthy food in the fridge for the kids to heat up themselves, rather than eating burgers and chips and that sort of stuff. After school.
And we need some of this for a certain 19 and three-quarter year old.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, we have a 19-year-old living with us and they eat a lot.
Yep.
They don't stop.
We know that. We have one. Who's currently landed in Queensland.
Yes.
He's put on his big boy pants and flown on his own today.
Ah.
Very excited. So how do things like, and this is, you're probably going to stare at me with nasty eyes across the desk, things like... light and easy and those sorts of things that are sort of touting themselves as low-fat and gourmet and all of this stuff that's good for us, how do they affect businesses like yours?
It's a different market. Mm. It's diet food. We're not diet food. Lafayette's not diet food. Lafayette's made with butter.
Yep.
You know.
Good. Excellent.
Everything, you know, all good things. Margarine is never allowed in the kitchen. Artificial flavourings aren't allowed. Powdered stocks aren't allowed. It's all, we make stock with bones.
Oh, wow.
You know, do it the proper way.
Which is as it should be.
As it should be.
Those people from Light and Easy, and I'm sure I'm going to end up with somebody on the phone in a minute, would tell us that their food is also healthy and made by chefs and da-da-da-da-da. Is that all spin, or do you think it's doable on that large scale?
Interesting. I know Light and Easy is all frozen food, so, you know, ours is all fresh.
Yep.
One does wonder.
Yeah.
Some signature dishes, some of the things that you love preparing that you have in the store that people will just go crazy for.
Well, one of them is the seafood pie. I like doing that at Easter. It's not something we do all the time, and so it's nice to have something different, and it's something I like myself and I would eat myself.
Do you take influences from where you've travelled
and
growing up? So you put your own personal stamp on that?
Yes, Michelle and I travel a lot.
Yep.
We actually have a house in Italy, and we spend...
Oh,
two or three months.
Where is your house in Italy?
It's in Marche, the region of Marche, Adriatic coast. And, you know, it's nice to go over there and experience how the Marchegiani do their food and produce, and we try and bring that back.
Oh, cool.
And
I've lost the word.
Do it in our shop.
Recreate it.
How
much influence do you take from places like Italy?
A lot. You know, the seasonal, everything's seasonal, fresh. You only use what's available. You don't, you know, buy stuff in from China, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Because the Italians tend to have the philosophy of food correct as far as very fresh, very seasonal, very much working with what they've got rather than what they're trying to buy.
Exactly right.
Can you remember the name of the two guys we saw recently from Piedmonte? The Costardi brothers. And the way these boys make a risotto. So they both look like bush rangers. And has this great round pot of risotto and just flips the pot rather than stirring the risotto.
Yes.
Chucks in some butter, flips the pot, chucks in some parmesan, flips the pot. And this risotto is probably rising maybe almost a foot out of the pot before it drops again. And that's the way they stir this risotto.
Yep.
It's fascinating.
It'd be fun.
It was really good to watch.
Yeah, it'd be great to watch.
Met some interesting people there at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Do you get involved with festivals that are local to you, or are you trying to avoid them?
I try to avoid them.
Why so?
We're just too busy, really, you know, and we don't have a lot of staff. We're a small business that to take someone like myself or our head chef out of the business is difficult sometimes.
So you're quite hands-on still in the business?
Absolutely, very hands-on,
How many chefs have you got working for you?
We've probably got, chefs and cooks, 15 people.
Wow.
That's a big team still to manage.
It is a big team to manage.
Is it difficult to manage your quality control from that point of view?
No, not really, because like Nathan said, I'm still hands-on and I'm in the kitchen. If I'm not there, then we have
new... when you're not in Italy or New Zealand
that's
San Francisco. Yeah.
Well, we're very lucky with our staff, and we've put on Laurent from who's come to us from the Mariner Group of Theatres, and he's now our executive
chef.
He had a
huge job.
Yes, and very high calibre.
Because he was the Region Ballroom.
That's right.
Yeah, as part of that group.
Correct.
Wow, I've eaten that food. That's pretty damn awesome.
Oh, it's good.
That's where we had the Age Good Food Guide Awards this year.
That's right. Yes.
It was rather a big night from memory. you are here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, 21 minutes after 1 o'clock. Sue is here from Lafayette Fine Foods. Very soon we will speak to Ala Wolf-Tasker, and we'll also catch up with British superstar Anjum Anand. She is, they say she's the Indian version of Nigella.
Compliment? Insult?
Look, it is a compliment. She's quite a talented woman. She's just finished filming a series here in Victoria and on the Mornington Peninsula and in Melbourne. She's like a Spice Queen.
Ooh.
I think she's the other Spice Girl. she was brought up in the UK, but she uses a lot of her Indian heritage to tell her stories, spices and things like that. So she's coming up very shortly. She's got another book out, I think, and another series about to air on SBS. So all that to come, and, of course, Ala Wolf-Tasker is talking about Regional Producers Day, Which brings me back to Sue. Your produce, do you source mostly local?
Yes, we do. All local. Yes.
How important is that to what you produce?
Oh, very important. Mm-hmm. Very, very important. I'm very much, even at home, I grow my own vegetables. I like to be able to go out to the garden and pick something. It's the same with our suppliers. I like to know that I can go into their store and pick what I want, mm-hmm. or ask their advice on something, particularly with the fish and stuff like that, what's in season at the moment.
Do you want to give your suppliers a shout-out? Who's your seafood supplier?
Ash Brothers.
Excellent.
Yes. We've been dealing with them for 23 years, and they're a great company to deal
fantastic.
With.
They really are fantastic. They are excellent. And where do you get most of your meat from, or is that varied?
It's varied. That is varied, actually.
What's the challenge in what you do? Obviously, there are challenges
challenge?
For everyone.
Challenges, well, the way we cook the food, it's home-cooked food, and then someone has to take it home and reheat it themselves, mm-hmm. so that the balance of getting something not overcooked, realizing that by the
because
time it goes...
Because you are relying on the end user, yes. to make things,
finish
to bugger
it
things
off.
Up.
That's mm-hmm. right, that's right. So, for instance, we have a lot of chefs who come and work for us, and they think it's sort of easy, and they don't quite understand that, no, you can't cook that risotto
all
completely,
mm-hmm.
because it's got to cool down, be packaged... Then someone's going to heat it up.
Again. They're going to stick
it
in the microwave.
It's not in a restaurant, that's right. And it's not how you do it in a restaurant. Mm. You plate it and service and gone. But for us, it's you've got to think about it more.
Do you find you get to exercise your creativity?
Yes, I do.
A lot?
Yes, I think so.
You don't feel hamstrung by being...
No.
Or do you choose what you do?
Basically, I choose what we do. Mm. And I'm lucky I'm at that stage now that because Laurent's on board, that I don't have to be actually in the kitchen. I just float around a bit more to the other stores and say, okay, I think we'll do seafood pies tomorrow. Mm. And just then go into the kitchen and do it without having to, get permission.
So if I went in today and had a look at what was on offer, and if I went in next week, would it be similar or would it be totally different of what was available?
We do a monthly menu.
Okay.
Which changes daily. Like a month. So Monday is a different menu from Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
What I mean,
yep.
But we keep that running for the month of March.
Okay.
And then in April we'll do
a new one.
April, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Turn my mic back on. That's a good way of doing it. We're going to have a couple of messages, and then we're going to embarrass the crap out of Ella Wolf Tasker by playing a happy birthday. And then we'll talk to her and we'll talk about regional produce, because she's got the Regional Producers Day coming up in April. She'll also probably give us a bit of a hint about what she likes to have for Easter as well, because you know those Russians. It is 25 minutes past one. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. I'm delighted to have Sue in the studio from Lafayette Fine Foods, and I'm more delighted to have Nathan here. We rarely get to sit in the same room for this amount of time.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are on Joy 94.9. Thank you, Adam. Now, we have to do something. She's sitting on the other end of the phone. I shouldn't say she's the cat's mother, but I have to do this, and I know that there's going to be a giggle in the background. So, Ella, this is for you. Never mind, that hasn't worked so well.
What is it?
Well, it was supposed to be the Minions singing you happy birthday, Ella Wolf Tasker.
They just didn't get round to it.
No, they didn't, and now they're doing it, and it's all too late. The moment's gone. Happy birthday, my dear.
Thank you. It's always a blessing to have another one, isn't it?
Oh, it is. But yeah, but they come around a little too quick for me. I swear I'm starting to have them every 6 months.
They do. But it's always a blessing. It's a bonus.
It is indeed. Now, in the studio, I've got Sue here from Lafayette Fine Foods in Brighton and Toorak.
Yes.
She's a very talented chef, like you. And somebody else you may know, his name's Nathan, also in the studio with me.
Yes.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And happy birthday.
Thank you. It's just the usual Saturday here. panic stations, the restaurant's full, We've got a wedding for 126 tonight. There's all these tattooed boys running around in the kitchen.
Oh, hello.
And Pete Dillon wants me to be civil to him on the phone.
Yes, well,
lunch time.
We need to talk about the Regional Producers Day, because we're talking about regional produce and beautiful food and Easter as well. So I'm going to come to Easter in a second, because I want a little bit of a hint on what you Russian folk like to have for Easter. But Regional Producers Day coming up in April. This is a very big day for you, isn't it?
Yes, yes. We open the whole grounds up to everyone who has stalls with local produce, and there's a big wine tasting tent, and we have shop the market, cook the market, cooking demos every 15 minutes, and there's music and there's tastings and there's people cooking sausages, and the local Murray Cod guy comes up with his truck with his Murray Cod in the tank, and it's bedlam, but it's a fantastic day. And we have a breakfast in the morning where all the producers stand up on a little milk crate and give a little 5-minute talk about what they produce, and we do a big breakfast for everyone so you can have breakfast with the producers first. It's a great day. I think it's our 14th or something. It's a bit of an icon now, but it's great fun, and we have wonderful people coming. We've got beef and lamb and ducks and lots of charcuterie and pastries, saffron. We've got saffron in the area now.
Are we growing saffron in Victoria?
Absolutely, in Glen Lyon, just down the road. Beautiful saffron.
Awesome, yes. We don't have to get it from Spain anymore.
Absolutely. Well, they do have some in Tassie, but the Victorian one's good.
Better.
Yeah, really good. yeah, absolutely. So, wonderful people, wonderful characters to meet, lots of music, lots of fun and great food, and it's only $12 to get in. So, with a tasting glass, or $40 if you come for breakfast, and that includes the entry and the tasting glass as well. So,
well,
it's pretty good.
There's three of us sitting here, so I think four of us will be there on the day. There's no question about that. When is it,
Well,
Ella?
I'd love to see you. April the 17th. Sunday, April the 17th. So, it's always a big day.
We will die, right?
We're an interesting hat, so that I can see you from a distance.
Well, we probably should come and stay on Saturday night, shouldn't we?
That'd be lovely, because then we could do drinks on the deck first and then launch into this mad day of madness, total madness. It's wonderful, because all of the producers look forward to it every day, because they can have a chinwag with all the people and they never get a chance to catch up with. We have masses of chefs come from Melbourne because they all want to see the latest beef that's being produced. And you can buy stuff too to take it home. So if you want to get a fabulous ribeye or something to take home, or some trout or whatever, you can take it home. And at least one of the farmers is bringing a chilled truck so they can hold all the stuff cold for you while you ramble around the market and buy sausages and drink wine and whatever.
Oh, sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good day.
Well, you bring a nice really Hessian bag or something to put it all in, so you're not using plastic.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Absolutely. Well, we have bags too. We have the Dalesford Macedon Produce puts out bags for everyone to use that are made out of recycled something. I don't know what recycled something good anyway.
Why do you keep doing it? It's not like you don't have enough to do, Ella.
Well, why do I keep doing it? Well, you know, I am just so over the moon. Like, you've got to remember, you don't remember because you're all too young. You don't remember what it was like when there was none of this stuff around. No, there was none of this stuff around. I came back from France as a young woman, as a young cook, dying to have all of these local producers around me, and I decided that I wanted to, you know, build this restaurant of my dreams, and I thought they'd all come flooding through the door, and of course we didn't. We had all the big ag. We had people growing corn and wheat and potatoes and all the stuff used to get shipped on trucks, but we didn't have any of the small artisan producers around us because we kind of missed out on having that peasant class that Europe, the French and the Italians have had for centuries. So people used to travel to Europe to have that sort of regional experience. And so when I started cooking here at Lake House in 1984, you had to go down to the wholesale markets and bring stuff back. And there was absolutely nothing in the area. And now, you know, three decades later, to see this amazing burgeoning stuff, I mean, there's someone new popping up, you know, virtually weekly, ringing us up and saying, look, I've just got a few acres. What do you want us to grow for you? And in the long term, we're going to do ducks, we're going to do pigs, we're going to do this, we're going to... Sustainable, diverse farming, you know, which is the best thing for the soil, the best thing for the food. And I've got it in my backyard and I want to share it with people. Well, it's fantastic.
What about a recipe for angry geese?
Stupid animal.
What did you say? A recipe for what?
Your angry geese. The angry geese on the lake.
Oh, well, the geese on the lake are, the geese on the lake are largely ours, but, you know, we get goslings every year, and you really do need to cull them at around about, I would say, you know, 10 weeks maybe, and they're still looking grey and fluffy at that stage, so we never do. So if I can, it's going to be the oldest flock of geese
in
the world,
Australia.
And we're actually going to have vet bills, because I can never cull them, you know. So they're just growing. They're growing numbers all the time, and everyone feeds them, and they get fed well here. Just by the way, you never have to force their geese. They just feed themselves.
Well, they're not the brightest animals, are they?
Don't know whether they're...
I call them the sheep of the poultry world.
Well, they, you know, they bond, when they hatch, they bond with the first thing they see, which, so they'll follow you, they'll think you're their mother if you're the first thing that they see. So it's called imprinting or something that geese do, but it's interesting, yeah.
Similar to apprentice chefs.
Yeah. Now.
I want to go back. You said something before I have to correct. When you came back to the lake house when you wanted to cook in 1984, I was already an apprentice chef, so I'm not that far behind.
Pete!
Yes.
You were not.
I was. I started my apprenticeship in 1983.
Well, you...
83, 84.
It's going to sound like a compliment, but I thought, my goodness, you must have started your apprenticeship at 4 or something.
Oh, Ella, you're too kind.
It's only because he hangs around with someone so young and beautiful, Dale.
Hey,
no, I didn't say beautiful.
Tell me, what do you like to have for Easter? If you're going to, I know you're always busy, but if you're going to sort of bang on a big Russian feast because that's your heritage, what's on the table for Easter in?
If it was a big Russian feast, and I don't get a chance to do the big Russian feast anymore. The Russian feasts are interesting because you do the 40 days of Lent beforehand, so you have
Shrove
Tuesday where you go stupid on pancakes because they eat pancakes with sour cream and herring and smoked fish and all that sort of
Yum.
Stuff. And then there's Lent where you're not supposed to eat any meat. And then my memory of my family household, my mother would bake for weeks beforehand. There'd be this intense smell of baking through the house with sort of lots of grated orange and sultana soaking in vodka and all of that kind of thing, and there'd be these things being baked. And then on the night of the Saturday before Christ is risen, which is the Sunday, which is the Easter Sunday, we'd all trot off to church with a basket of coloured eggs and cakes and things, and everything would get blessed at a midnight mass. And then everyone would go back to people's houses, and we would then eat and drink. So it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was so special because being a kid, you're allowed to stay up.
Mm.
And then you would feast until dawn after the midnight mass, and then you would all fall asleep. And then everyone would wake up and go and visit each other and then have more eating.
Have something else to eat.
Easter Sunday. But, I mean, traditionally, there's always smoked fish on the table to start off with. They start off with zakuska, which is small bites of things, so like an antipasto, I guess. Lots of smoked fish. That's why we have smoked eel quite often on the table at Lake House, because it reminds me of Dad's beautiful smoked eels. There'd always be a terrific beetroot salad. So certainly we serve lots of beetroot here at Lake House because it's grown nearby. It's organic. Mm-hmm. It's heirloom. It's beautiful. So a lovely beetroot salad, again, with sour cream, smoked fish. There'd always be some kind of meat pastry like pirozhki or something like that, hot out of the oven, either done with meat or with cabbage and mushrooms. And then there would be these wonderful babka loaves, you know, egg-glazed, beautiful loaves with really, really rich, like a brioche dough, but with sultanas and
Yum.
Orange rind and orange peel through it, that would be usually served hot and then slathered with lots and lots of butter. And the coloured eggs, of course.
I so should have been Russian.
Well,
all I'm hearing is some stuff soaking in booze and smoked fish and butter and sour cream.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, conviviality and you know, good living, that's what life's all about. It's all about getting together and shared tables and really enjoying the best food and wine and booze that you can get, really. I mean, that kind of sharing of food, you know, it's multicultural. There isn't a culture that doesn't actually enjoy it. So
Correct.
It's something that we can all enjoy, and it speaks a myriad international languages, so you can always find something in common with someone over food and wine.
You can
which
indeed.
Is great.
It's beautiful. Sue, did you want to ask anything of Eloise? She's on the phone. No. Nath? They've both gone quiet on me, Ella.
What do you do?
We're just sitting here. We're just wiping the drool.
Sue?
Yes, hello.
Susie, at Fine Food, do you do, is it a charcuterie, is it a deli, or is it a cafe, or what is it?
No, it's just a retail food store, so takeaway meals.
Lovely.
Yeah, so you can come in and grab a lasagna or a curry or a
seafood pie, my goodness,
or a seafood pie and take it home, reheat it.
Yeah. Well, that's important nowadays because, I mean, I think, you know, if it's food with integrity, if it's good food, what you're doing is solving people's, you know, creating a solution for people where they don't have to go and have fast food.
Which, that's correct,
you know,
yes.
Quite often is not great. And, you know, we've had another major retailer whom I won't mention admitting this week that, yes, they do use GM soy and canola in their chicken feed. So, you know, I mean, it's just... we never know really what we're eating anymore. So to have someone actually prepare good, honest, fresh food
with beautiful produce,
possible sources, yeah, lovely,
all sustainable.
Lovely.
Hey, Ella, we'll let you get back to the madness that is a lake house today. You have a full restaurant.
Yeah,
you've got
I just
a wedding.
Have to go and whip another tattooed boy in the kitchen.
Well, can you stop it? You'll have me blushing.
Just take the photos.
We'll see you for the Regional Producers Day at the lake house. The date again.
April the 17th, and I'll see you there, young man.
You will, young lady. We'll have people popping it in their diary. You are here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, and a belated happy birthday, but I hope it was a good day, Ella.
Thanks, Pete.
Pleasure.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye. She's a lovely woman, Ella Wolf-Tusker. She's very smart. Another very smart woman coming up in just a moment, but first we'll have a couple of announcements.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news, and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now. joy.org.au.
Anja Menand is compared sometimes to Nigella Lawson. She is, I think, the queen of English cooking in the UK, and she joins me right now. Anja, welcome to Cravings.
Oh, thank you. Hi, good to be here.
How do you find those comparisons to Nigella Lawson?
You know what? The comparison started, like, literally the first time I walked into a radio interview 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. I walked in and she goes, "You look like Nigella Lawson." And I was like, "Do I really?" And she just pretty much announced it on radio, and it stuck. And the thing is, actually, it's not a bad comparison, because Nigella is amazing. She was already very popular. I was a nobody. And, you know, people got curious. Having said that, having had two series now on TV, we're very different, and people understand me for what I am now. I'm really passionate about Indian food. I'm passionate about really healthy eating. So we are quite different. But no, I've had lots of weird things happen. People come up to me in the street saying, "Are you Nigella?" And I'm like, "But I'm brown." So, you know, I take her with a big pinch of salt. I wonder what Nigella thinks of it, though, to be honest. It might be quite irritating for her.
I'm sure she'll be fine with it. She would take it as a wonderful compliment as well. Tell us about where your love of food came from. You grew up in the UK, but clearly your Indian heritage is incredibly important to you.
Yeah, I guess growing up in another country, my parents were always very good that they always took us back to India as often as they could so that we had some roots in India and that we understood that we were Indian. But also they are first generation immigrants, so they left India and they came, and actually we spent 10 years in Switzerland from when I was 4 to 14. And it's as different as you can get from India, so it's literally night and day. So I suppose our home was like a little India. So I would walk in and there would be Indian food every day, there would be Indian movies and all of that. So it was quite fun, because, you know, you go out of the house and it's one world, and you come back home and there's another world. And so I grew up quite close with my culture, which is great. And food's a big part of the Indian world, because it's very social. It's a very social way of being. You know, we socialize around food a lot, and my parents were very sociable people, so they always had parties over. And I suppose the first thing I ever cooked was for one of their parties. My mom sat me down in the kitchen, she made the filling for these samosas, and then she taught me how to roll a samosa to, like, perfect little triangles. So I remember I just sat there and did, I don't know, 50, 60 samosas, and I was super proud of myself. And then when the guests came, she fried it up, and then she served it, and she goes, "Anja made
these. And of course, my chest puffed out, this 8-year-old girl saying, God, look at me, I'm so great. No, but I think that starts the journey, doesn't it? When you make something and then people appreciate it, and you feel good about it, and then you think, I want to do a bit more. You know, and I do that with my daughter now, to be honest. And I think that was not the beginning of my career, but for sure, all those positive, lovely feelings of cooking and feeling good about it and enjoying it all brings you to a place where actually food is a very positive thing. So food for me has always been positive, and I got into food much later though. And I kind of love all those memories and try to recreate them for my family, and I hope others are doing the same.
How did you get into food? What was the genesis that saw you working in food as a career?
You know, being Indian, you're never really encouraged to go into food because women have always been in the kitchen and our generation can have an education. So I did 4 years in business school with languages. And having done that, I thought, I want to work for myself. I want to be an entrepreneur, not really knowing what that was going to look like. But I worked in small companies to kind of get an understanding, and I absolutely hated it. And then I'd come home every night and I would cook, and I absolutely loved it. And I had this aha moment, which was sort of, I can do that because I've got a degree in that, and for 40 years, and then retire and finally enjoy my life. Or I can cook every day. I might not make very much money because it's not a very remunerative career, but I love what I do every day. And in that moment, I thought, I'm going to give it a go.
You've clearly got some support around you to allow you to make that decision.
Yes, I was living at home because, you know, good Indian girls don't leave home until they get married those days. So I was living at home, so I didn't have rent, I didn't have a mortgage. So I spoke to my parents and I said, they really want to try it. And they said, okay. So I was really lucky that despite them being horrified that I wanted to work in a kitchen, especially after having educated me for 4 years in business school and sent me abroad, they kind of realized that I was really serious about it, and they said okay. And I think internally they said to themselves, we'll give her a year and we'll see. But I kind of just spent that year like working in kitchens and hotels and fast food chains, and they knew I was serious. And I've always been quite serious about work anyway. So, and then, you know, I got really serious about my first book, and they couldn't really stop me.
How hard was it to get that first book published? It seems to be a major hurdle for a lot of people who have a book in them.
Yeah.
How was that journey for you?
It is really hard. I mean, it was really hard and it is really hard. And when I published my first cookbook, we didn't have the internet in the same way we do now. So, I mean, I literally went to the library, took down all the publishers of all the lovely cookbooks, found out all the editors' names, and then wrote to them blanket email, 100... whatever it was, wasn't 100, but it was a lot, letters to kind of send them my manuscript. And then I got lots of rejections, and then I was traveling to America a bit, so did the same in America, met with a few people, but then ultimately it was that whole thing of, are you on TV? Because if you're on TV, then we can do a cookbook, because then people know who you are. It's the whole chicken and egg thing, right? And I was like, well, why would they put me on TV unless I have a cookbook? And then I came back to London and someone told me, you need to have an agent. So then I did the same exercise. I got the handbook of agents out from my library and I did the same exercise and I wrote to agents. And actually one of the first agents I wrote to got my letter and stroke manuscript, and she had just had Indian food the night before, and she thought, why don't we have like a modern Indian chef? The only one around was Mother Jaffrey, and she hadn't been around for a bit. And so she wrote back to me, and I suppose that was the beginning, and she placed my first book. But it did take 2 years, and you really have to believe in either yourself or the book, and I believed very much in the book.
I have a book. Okay. I haven't got it published. And it was inspired by Vikas Khanna. I don't know if you're familiar with Vikas.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's... I think there's a lot of stories to be told about the emotional connection to food, and I think the story that Vikas told me had me just weeping as he was telling me that story. An incredible human being. Another inspiration, I guess, or another comparison I can make, I'm not sure if you've seen a film called The 100-Foot Journey.
Yeah, I've seen it. Loved it. Read the book first. Loved the book.
Mm.
Kind of wanted to be him in a weird way, because everyone's journey to food is so interesting. And I regret not having gone to, like, the 4 years or 3 years at proper culinary school, because my journey was very different. So I'm self-taught, which is great in a way, because no one's told me the rules. So I do what I think is right for my generation of cooks. But I love the fact that he had this amazing opportunity to like learn from the best French chef, which he then spiced up in his own way. And I still think at some point I'll retire, and then that's what I'll do.
The love of spice was, and I don't want to keep referring to other people's work, but the love of spice is very prevalent in both of the stories that I've become entranced by, and one of them is The 100-Foot Journey, the other is that of Vikas Khanna. What's, it's such a part of, it's almost ingrained in culture that without spice there is no culture. Is that a fair assumption or is that a bit silly?
No, there's a lot to that. I'll tell you why. Yes, India is actually all about spices, is what it's about. Because if you compare foods from different regions of India, there's actually sometimes no commonality. You know, if you look at what they grow in Kashmir, it's almost like what they grow in England. And then if you go down south, they don't have any of the same ingredients because it's like a different continent. So when I look at Indian food, the only thing holding the whole thing together is the spices. And so for me, that is Indian food. And actually, if you go to India, you can't get away from spices. It's everywhere. And it feels like it's everywhere. It's in the tea. It's in the food. It's almost in our blood. Mm. So I do get that.
The smell of fenugreek, I think, permeates almost every part of India. And it's a smell that I adore. And I cook with fenugreek a lot because there is just something very, I don't know, comfortable about the smell of that, and I guess reminding me of houses I've been to where Indian people are cooking. Is it that particular smell or are there others?
So fenugreek is not used in every dish. So for me, that's not a typical Indian food smell from my house. But I appreciate that in different regions they use it more or less. And I know in curry houses you definitely have that smell as you walk in. No, for me, you know what? Growing up, every day I would walk home, I'd walk into the house, and I would know exactly what my mum was cooking. I'd be like, today we're having rice and red bean curry. Because the smells, you can tell what you're having. But for me, there is no one smell. Because I've grown up with a variety of Indian food, different smells mean different things to me. And I like it that way, because Indian food is so broad. It's almost nice to leave it that way and not reduce it to, you know, a smell or a type of food or an ingredient.
Anjuman Anand is my guest. She is from the UK, as you may pick up by her accent. She's all sorts of comparisons have been made, but on her own, she is an incredibly talented cook, a cookbook author, and the star of now two TV series, one filmed all here in Victoria, the Mornington Peninsula and Melbourne. How did you find filming and cooking here and finding the ingredients you needed to be able to bring those stories to life?
Well, I think it's such an experience, which is what I think life is about. It's about the experience. For me, at least, it's the journey. And coming here and filming was an amazing opportunity, one I grabbed. And I find that you can find every Indian ingredient here to make a curry. And then I would look for local fresh ingredients to cook with. So it was that lovely melge of spices and local ingredients, which is exactly what Indian food is about, local ingredients and spices. And then, so I cooked things that I thought, you know, the Australians would like to eat. So there's no point cooking something just to show them what happens in India. I want it to be really relevant to how you eat today. So, you know, whether it's simple tandoori chicken, because I know everyone loves barbecued roasted food, it's delicious. There's street food, there's kind of picnic food, there's a bit of everything in it. And then I would find local ingredients like great fish, and I would make some fish curry or some prawn cakes and spice them up with Indian flavors. So I'm hoping what it ends up with is that there's a lot of familiar things going on, and the only mix-up is the spices, so people will be like encouraged to actually cook it.
Are you surprised by the success that's come from your sort of leap of faith into the unknown and deciding you wanted to cook and, you know, get a book deal and do a second book and make these series? Are you surprised by the success or people looking at you in the street going, oh my goodness, that's Anjum?
Yeah, I never even thought beyond the first book. I just thought, I've got to get this book published. And, you know, I had spent my whole life thinking I'm going to be this entrepreneur. And then I came to the point where that was going to be a reality, and I actually hated that. So I stopped doing long-term planning. I don't have fixed visions of what my career should be like. So my journey has been amazing. I've been so lucky to be able to write my books, film some series in different parts of the world, travel to India to eat and get to know my own country a lot better. So I feel very lucky to have had that in my career. And I don't even know what's next, because I don't think that far, to be honest. I'm enjoying it. It seems to be unfolding ahead of me, but I grab every opportunity I have.
Is there a restaurant in the offing?
No. No, you know what? I started out wanting a restaurant, as all cooks stroke chefs do. And then the reality of a restaurant is it's not always about the food. It becomes about managing a restaurant, managing the staff, managing your stock. And then I felt quite that might be quite claustrophobic for me because I'm very creative. I think that's what I love about food is the creativity of it. And you can't keep changing your menu. And I realized actually that's not an ideal path for me. I think in theory, it's fun because you get to chat with people, which I like. You build a customer base, which I like. But I think the reality of it is quite different. And I think there are some great restaurateurs out there. And I think it's a challenging job. But I've loved my journey. You know, writing cookbooks means every time I write another cookbook, that's another 80 to 100 recipes that I can create and invent, which I love. And also, I've been very lucky to start The Spice Tailor, which is my own brand of sauces, which is actually what brought me to Australia in the first place. So I feel like I can still get people to eat my food in their homes, or they can still taste it without me going to their homes, should I say. So I think I've had a bit of everything.
Who inspires you from a day-to-day basis? Is there somebody whose journey you've watched and admired, or is there a grandmother hiding somewhere that inspires? Who's that inspiration to sort of keep that creativity flowing, to keep your creative juices moving?
I think my creative juices flow when I go back to India and I eat the food, because then I think, oh my God, this is an amazing dish, I need to write about it. So that's probably my source of information, inspiration and information. And then just traveling, coming to Australia, seeing what Australians eat, creating new recipes for what I think here. I get very inspired by where I'm at and Indian food. In terms of a person I look at and I think they've done it right, I think Jamie Oliver for me is just a god, because he started out in the River Cafe, has built this amazing career on TV, of books, of a production company, of restaurants. He's done it all. He's pretty young, and he's done it really well. So, you know, it's so common for me to hear, oh, tonight I'm doing a Jamie recipe. And I just think, how brilliant that you've inspired so many people to cook on all levels. So for me, he's sort of the hero.
Well, with this series, which airs very shortly on SBS, and of course your books, we might be able to say, I'm cooking an Anjum tonight.
Well, that would be amazing. I'm lucky to say, I mean, I've been here just 4 days, and we did a photo shoot the other day, and the Home Economist said, you are my go-to Indian chef. And I thought, I'm happy. Mm. I'm happy. You know, it's good to hear. I don't expect everyone to cook from my books. I don't expect everyone to have heard of me. I don't expect hardly anyone to have heard of me. But when you do hear that people think that your recipes are really good, it makes it all worth it.
Anjum, it's been a delight to meet you. I wish we had some more time, but next time you're back in Australia, we'll get you into the studio and we'll talk a little longer.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you very much for having me in.
You're welcome. That's Anjum Anand. She is, sadly, she'll be back in England by the time you hear this interview, and her new series is airing very shortly on SBS. I'll put all the details up of that very shortly. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. I am, of course, Pete Dillon.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
We have to run along. Nathan Miller, thank you for joining me in the studio.
Pleasure as always.
Sue, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thank you, Pete.
Tell people again, where is Lafayette Fine Foods Brighton?
Lafayette Brighton is 355 New Street.
Excellent. Toorak?
Is 429 Toorak, at the corner of Toorak and Wallace.
On the interwebs?
Mm.
Lafayette, just Google Lafayette Fine Foods for those two. Thank you to Anjum Anand. Thank you also to Ella Wolf Tusker, the Regional Producers Day. We'll get all of that information, including Anjum Anand's new series on SBS, all up on Twitter. So you can go to twitter.com, Cravings, Joy 949. You'll get all the information. I have been Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings. I look forward to your company next Saturday.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.